welcome along to episode 3 of the Design Ops podcast. I'm your host, Sean Johnson, and this week I'm joined by the head of community and content at Zero Height, the host of the other Design Ops podcast, the Design Ops Island Discs, my good friend. And I nearly said it then. I was going to say, like, every time I go to say your name, I always say Lurk Moofy. But in the real world, Mr. Lurk, see, there you go, Lurk, Luke Murphy.
Hey, that's just called employer branding, you know, it's personal branding. Need to get it in there. I'm so glad that I'm ingrained in your mind.
it's your Twitter tag, right? And it's just stuck in my head.
It's funny because it has been my Twitter tag since I was when did I join Twitter? I don't know. It was like early 20s.
1984.
Yeah, 1984, yeah.
So when I first met you, I think you were a kind of designer stroke illustrator who also did code.
Yep.
Then you kind of sort of meandered through, like I think most of us do, that you went to, were you design manager at Memrise?
I went through a whole bunch of different roles at Memrise. From product designer to product manager to design manager, and then actually ended up as head of design there. I just don't put it down on my list because I don't think I want to be saddled with that. So,
right. Okay. Well, that's what I was kind of getting to that actually as part of the question. So, and that you're now sort of head of content at Zero Height. And yeah, I'm always keen to hear that the stories of people that kind of drift is probably the wrong word. It's quite a negative connotation to any, but they kind of drift through the disciplines, right? And try different things. And then you clearly get to a point where. And I think I'm probably at that point now where do I carry on practicing design or do I go off leading design? You rarely find people doing both. So what do you do currently in your role at Zero Height?
So, I mean, that's an interesting one. So as you said, I'm sort of head of community and content in title. But what that means is that I lead a team of design advocates. So it's not something that you'd really hear of day to day, but it's sort of pulled from, I'm sure you've sort of dealt with or met developer evangelists or developer advocates before.
Yeah, sure.
So same concept for design. So because we're a design tool, they decided that they needed some, you know, great designers to come in who are pretty good at talking about things and, you know, educating people about what good design systems, design ops, design is, as a way of basically making people excited about Zero Height because they've got some like really cool people talking about cool stuff that's not, you know, necessarily the product. So yeah, so I lead that team and get paid way too much to enthuse about design systems, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, pretty awesome. So Dan Donald's one of your design advocates, right?
He is. Yes.
That's an interesting answer. That's probably a conversation I'm quite keen to have too, just to see, because I guess that's moving away from practicing design, right, into more talking about, right?
And yeah, it's a really tough sell actually. I've got three design advocates at the moment, all from slightly different backgrounds. So Dan, I managed to pluck from Auto Trader, who was their content and experience lead on their design system. So very heavy, used to be a front end. So used to be the front end lead, very heavy on front end and especially front of front end, but has quite a lot of experience with, you know, design systems and the sort of leadership side of design systems. We've got another one who comes from a design ops and product design background in like a big tech company in the US, from Citrix. And then another who comes from like the design consultancy side. So like from Frog Design in France. So like one of the big agencies, as their like design systems expert. So each of those, almost impossible to convince to stop doing design day to day. But I suppose when it came down to it, you're still doing the same thing. It's just in a slightly different way.
Yeah.
Because, you know, as you said, I think I might have been off mic. But when you're when you get more into the product and the UX side of design, it's more about the thinking through things.
Yeah.
And to be honest, a lot of it is about educating other people on what the right way or right thing to do is. So really, this is just them doing that part of the job full time, which is pretty cool.
Sure. So I spoke to Paul Bowag on the first show, who admitted he didn't really know what the term design ops was, right? Which I think it's a relatively new term, right? It was coined fairly recently, and I think
2016 actually.
Okay, right. Okay, it's getting on a bit then, right?
It is. But there were 2 years there that don't count, so it's.
Yeah, true. So I suggested what I think it is that it's the work you do around design that allows you to do design, right?
Yeah.
And I guess a lot of people in design might wonder what design operations is if they have not come across the term. But so in your words, what is design ops?
Okay, so in my terms, design ops is basically exactly what you said. It's all about the people, the processes, and the tools, I suppose, that help designers do their work better day to day. It is very specific at the moment to product design and UX design. There is actually another type of ops called creative ops, which is more around like the traditional sort of brand graphic comics okay. designers. But I know nothing about that. That's more like studio stuff. But yeah, it's around sort of making the processes and like the tooling more efficient and making sure that the people are like helped and managed in the right way so that they are happy and productive and whatever it is that you're trying to achieve in your organization, I suppose, because yeah, you know sure. it's, but yeah, it's, and I think it is something that I don't know, I think it's something that's been missing for way
well,
too
it
long
has, right? And to your point about, you know, that obviously the creative ops, I'm hearing research ops too, right? There's I think it exists everywhere. We've had DevOps for a long time, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
And I'm probably quite keen to speak to somebody in DevOps just to talk to them about what that is and then compare, because yeah. you know, obviously, you know, dev and design are two completely different worlds. They shouldn't be, but they are.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, absolutely that. And I think you see people who have the job title of design ops, or that, you know, that's their role. I guess if you've got a design org that's, you know, 10 people plus or maybe more. But if you haven't, then those problems still exist, right? You've still got to figure those things out yourself.
Yeah. So it's something that I'm really interested in, because it's something that usually the design leaders end up filling in, or the the ICs, the players, the on the ground designers end up filling in as part of their job, like sort of as a side thing. And it's interesting because you're right. I mean, design ops as a role rarely exists in anything under a sort of, to be honest, actually, it's more like 20 to 30 is like the minimum design org size.
Yeah.
But you do start seeing, I think around the sort of 10, 15 point, you do start seeing design managers who are one of the sort of roles within design ops. And to be honest, you start seeing other ones that I would also count as design ops. So things like anything to do with the design systems team.
Right.
Because what's a design system there to do? It's to help the processes and make everything sort of smoother and more efficient and more consistent. It's the bit that's sort of sits in between. So
absolutely,
I think it, you know, very firmly belongs in the design, under the design ops umbrella. But yeah, it is, you're right, the problems still massively exist, but I would say actually the fact that it hasn't been formalized is a problem, because I think that a lot of people don't know the problem space very well. Yeah. And are usually only dealing with it as problems come up in that kind of like operation space, so not using, you know, what is best practice or whatever to affect it in a way that, you know, it's been tried and tested. And usually it's more that people are just, you know, throwing poop at the wall and seeing what sticks.
Yeah. So what are some of those problems then? What do you see as some of the biggest problems that design ops, but not necessarily design ops people, designers yeah. face in that space?
Yeah, I think a lot of it is to do with, it's actually interesting, because I think it's similar to one of the big problems that we hear about in the design system space specifically is governance.
Right.
And it's like how you start to, I don't know about you, but I felt once you get past about three or four designers, especially if designers are working in separate squads, which seems to be the like common model in product orgs these days,
yeah.
The processes that everyone uses start to seem to diverge a little bit.
Yeah,
everybody starts to kind of use their own. Also, that's when you start seeing problems with like quality control and consistency and duplication of work and a lot of these things. So it's where like actually coming in and sort of, you know, designing and defining a process, and not only process but like almost like quality control gates for the process. So and I'm not talking about like super heavy things like putting in place, I don't know, have you ever used Abstract before with Sketch?
I tried it when it first came around. Yeah,
I mean, it's a great concept. The concept of like GitHub style version control for design,
yeah,
phenomenal idea. Probably not needed if you only have four designers. You know, there are light lightweight ways of doing that. But I think that, you know, having something in place so that you have a shared understanding and a shared sort of like process and shared understanding of like what good enough is and what done is and all of those things, you know, what are the points that you actually come and bring your work to the table? What are those points, you know, where you look for approval and who you look for approval for? I think that's usually one of the first things that rears its head.
Yeah.
And then I think the next biggest one is management. It's people ops. Which is one of those things. It's usually, again, 4 or 5 designers, you've got a head of design, all of a sudden they're not able to manage anyone effectively because they're also trying to, you know, steer the ship and come up with strategy and figure out the ops and the process stuff and all the rest of it. And usually that's something that starts to suffer, and you know, you start to see people getting unhappy and growth not happening, and you know, potentially people falling through the cracks, and
absolutely,
or people moving on.
You didn't mention hiring, and it's like the books, any books that you can buy. I've got a couple of books that they don't have design ops in the title, but they're more around design org, so it's the same thing, right? They're probably written before design ops was coined, but you know, you flick through those books and there's probably a chapter relating to what I consider like hands-on design ops, which you were just talking about, all those problems, and the rest of the book's about hiring people. And it kind of to me it's like, well, okay, but the place I struggle with is all of that other that you've condensed down into, you know, not even a whole chapter, right? And it's that's why I was keen to do this podcast and talk to people that hopefully have had problems. Because another thing, right, is, you know, I've been doing this for, you know, 25 odd years now, right? I joked to Paul Boag about, you know, we never had these problems before, and now all of a sudden we've got problems, and it's like, where do these problems come from? I know you start working at scale, and you know, obviously bigger budgets and more money, more problems, right?
I can tell you exactly where the problem came from, though. Design orgs have not been mature until about 2014, 2015. Like that is the crux of it, right? Designers only really started to be taken seriously as a discipline, and as a discipline that had like weight and business importance, probably around the like 2010 space, maybe a little bit earlier.
Yeah.
But even then, you compare us to engineering, and it's just engineering was taken seriously back in the 90s. You know, the fact that, you know, a CTO or a CIO or whatever it is was a commonplace board title, yet we still don't have a chief design officer as commonplace.
No.
So it is still design orgs are immature. And so that's why I think, you know, we're probably immature is maybe a bit of a strong word there, but
I think you're right. I think that's where a lot of my concerns probably lie, is the fact that design is often sitting under, you know, under product or even, you know, under delivery, right? And it's kind of, it almost needs its own tower. And I think when I've seen a few people, as I've gone, I guess most of my work's probably been agency side for the last sort of 10 years or more. I've been client side a couple of times, and I think in those places it's probably more commonplace to see design in its own tower. But I think in agency world, it's much more common that, you know, design sits within product, or and I think that's probably where a lot of my concerns go, because you're getting somebody outside of the design realm making decisions for you, right? And or maybe not quite understanding.
It's I mean, I've also heard it as design under engineering as well, which is another it's another red flag for me. It's one of those things. I think I was super dogmatic about this a couple years ago, especially as I was sort of leaving Memrise. I was very dogmatic about the fact that you needed equal product engineering and design heads. Like, if you have one that is reporting to another, then you've got an imbalance of power there. That means that there's an imbalance of you know, what is seen as important. I don't know. It's interesting because Zero Height, even though we're a very, you know, design forward company, we do actually have our head of engineering and head of design both report into our chief product officer, who is one of the founders and used to be our CTO beforehand. So like has a good understanding of at least the, you know, the engineering and the product side of things, but has always been, you know, leading design at Zero Height. And it's not, I mean, it's working pretty well.
Yeah.
You know, we haven't had any major problems. In saying that, we've already started to see an imbalance of power there, and the fact that product has a little bit more weight. And so, you know, we're remedying that by basically hiring a head of product and having those three levels as very, you know, equal. And then, you know, our CPO will sit there as more of like a strategic figurehead. It's the three-legged stool of product development is what everyone talks about. And it's, I can't remember his name. There's like a big product management guy that kind of screwed it up for everybody by basically saying that product needs to sit on top of that stool.
Right.
And it's I can kind of, I understand it's very hard. It kind of makes things longer and all the rest of it when you've got three people kind of clashing about, you know, what the right priorities are, not only like things like roadmap, but also priorities for like what we focus on and how we deliver and what MVP means and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, it makes things longer, but you also end up with a more rounded product. So
yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. I think that's why I see, you know, it's like to design and deliver a good user experience, I think there's three parts to it, right? There's the business, because yeah, the business is there, it's their money that's paying for it, right? There is obviously the tech, you know, tech constraints, what yeah, can and can't you do, and there's the third, which is the user, the customer yeah, experience, right? The people using the product, and those, it needs to be three equal seats at that table. I know it's that old cliche of a seat at the table, but it's those three. I think those, it's a Venn diagram, right? It's the centerpiece yeah, of those three things. It will give you the best experience because you're considering the factors that matter. You know, how much money have you got? What are the tech constraints, and what does the user need, right? And I think if you take the user need out of that, and you've got, they're sitting below the business, which I guess is that the product, right? And then yeah, tech and decisions are made around what money's available and what tech's available, and you know, then you're considering the user need. It's kind of like, well we can build something fantastic, but if nobody wants to use the fucking thing, right? So yeah, okay,
it's a tough one, but I do think yeah, I think again it kind of goes back to the fact that I don't know, product is still, you know, relatively immature as well. It's interesting because it's like product ops is another area that's coming up now finally, right? And actually I think the product is even potentially a little bit more immature than you know, design as well, because I mean, do you go off and study product management? I don't even know if you can yet.
On your podcast, Design Ops, and I can never say this, it's a tongue twister. Design Ops Iron Discs. I think the concept's yes, great, right? But I can't say it. You focus a lot on design systems, right?
Yeah.
And often when you talk, you know, you're talking about design ops, design systems often gets mentioned. I think you answered it in what you said, right? It seems like it's the toolkit for design ops almost, right?
It's one of the toolkits. I think that's the important
thing. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, yeah. Yeah,
it's
yeah,
really, because it is many, really interesting. I think it's one of the areas at the moment that is probably moving the fastest. And I think that's like the interesting part of it. You know, it basically feels like at the moment, at least, you've only really got two areas of design ops that are like active, you know, people working in them. And, you know, it's a commonplace thing, which are your design program management, which is where the term came from. And that's sort of the people who came up with it came from that school of DPM, which is pretty much like a, you know, it's like a hybrid between like a people manager, a product manager, and a project manager, but very focused on design delivery.
Right.
And you see these, you know, Pinterest were one of the first ones. So, you know, folks like Meredith Black and Alison Zender sort of came through there and have sort of been big voices within the design ops community. Folks like Dave Maloof as well. Mm-hmm. And that's like, to be honest, I feel like when most people talk about design ops, that's usually what they're referring to.
Yeah.
But design systems is very much, you know, it's the same thing. I think it's like, to me anyway, it's like design ops is the solving the people problem. A lot of the time, the people and the process problem that relate to the people. And to me, design systems is one of the first real tangible ways that we've found to solve the sort of like tooling and process, but more from like a, you know, delivery workflow automation point of view. Right. How do we get something from product through to the user's hands? And how do we make that process better? You know, how do we get a concept of something like continuous integration, which has been something that's, you know, been a standard in dev space for years? How do we get that from idea to you know, into the user's hands, into the code, basically? And I think that's like a lot of what, you know, design systems is doing. It's not, we're not talking about like automating completely and saying, you know, stick your idea into ChatGPL and it outputs an app with beautiful working code that you can submit to the App Store. But we're talking about like automating and refining and smoothing a lot of those processes and problems that exist in that space.
Yeah, I guess that sort of leads on quite nice actually to probably talk about Zero High. I think the core focus of Zero High is design systems, right?
Yeah. So it's interesting actually. I started there when they were talking about being, you know, the design design ops platform of the future.
That's what I was looking for. I was saying, I don't know if you can see me sneakily looking. I've seen that recently. So I know you did this, the Converge Conf earlier this year, which I think was great. So I've got a question which you can answer in a moment. Are there any more planned? Because I need more of that. It was fantastic. It was great to be in person, at a conference. It was wonderful. But as soon as I saw the ticket for Design System Conference, 50 quid or whatever it was, I thought, right, I'm having that. I then kind of learned that it was less about design systems and more what's going on around design systems, right? The governance and that really sort of, it almost, obviously all the talks that and what I've done, who I've spoken to since then, has made almost like a light switch go on. And for me, design systems is less about, you know, your Figma file or your React library or whatever they're arguing what isn't included in the design system these days, and much more about the governance of it, right? And the management of the thing.
100%.
And that's when I saw Zero Height talking about, you know, and I can't, you said the phrase, and I'm trying to find it on the site, but that, you know, it's almost like a design ops platform, right?
Yeah. So I think that's the thing is, so we used to refer to ourselves as sort of, you know, the future design ops platform. Because the idea was, you know, we started as, I mean, to be honest, actually, we didn't even start as a design systems tool. We started as a dev handoff tool. So like much like Zeppelin, came a bit too late to the party and got eaten by a competitor. And so, you know, which is fine. And so they pivoted from that into, I don't know if you remember Craft from Envision.
Yeah.
Something that was very similar to that. So a way to like manage your components in Sketch. And so again, pivoted to that and kind of, you know, had a little bit of success. I think the plugin might still exist somewhere. Right. I don't know. But from that, as part of like a thing they were doing, they were like, well, I'm sure we can like spit these out into a really nice website. And it was around the time, it was like 2016, 2017, when you started to have things like Pattern Labs start to pop up from like Brad Frost, where, you know, it was like websites that would be basically like a style guide for your design system and start to like allow you to document your design system. And you had folks like Carbon and Polaris and whatnot having these big, you know, chunky, big, well-documented design systems.
Yeah.
And so when they did that sort of outputted site, it was basically one of those moments of, oh, this is the product. And I think it was like, that was the start for them. So that was sort of where they, you know, very much like, well, let's get into this. And what they realized pretty quickly is that it was just the tip of the iceberg, because they started to get involved in design ops. That was around the time that I joined, and started to like look into the world of design ops and realize there's a massive space for, there's going to be a lot, basically there's a lot of not only tooling, but like education around best practice that needs to happen here. So that was when we were saying we're going to be the design ops platform of the future, because also we were trying to make a point around design systems being basically design ops. What we realized was that actually there's a lot of problems still to solve in design systems. Really, when it comes down to it, what I was talking about and what you were talking about around the fact that it's like governance and contribution and adoption and measurement and all of these kind of things are really important for making design systems successful. But once you've built tooling that supports that, it's going to be pretty easy to then pivot that into other parts of the design process as well, use that tooling for other parts of the design process. So it's one of those things where even though we kind of dropped it from our official messaging, basically because it was confusing people, it was one of those things where it's like our mission has not changed. We're still aiming to own the design ops like space. We want to help people in the design ops space, because there's just nothing there. So it's like, let's create, not that, you know, this is who we are, but it's like, let's create the GitHub equivalent, that, you know, GitHub changed development for like in DevOps as a concept. And you know, there were loads of other tools that have really had massive effect on DevOps and the development sort of process. But none of that really exists for designers at the moment. And so it's like, you know, that's basically what we're trying to do.
Well, it's good. And also the community you've got there, you've obviously got your podcast, which is part of the Zero Height, the community. But also, I mean, you do a lot of webinars, and obviously, like, probably to come back to answer that question, Converge, is there part two? Is there going to be more?
Nothing official yet, but let's just say that we would really like a trip over to the States in the first half of the year next year.
Okay.
And then we'll probably have to come back to London. London in the second half of the year. That's the cryptic message I'm going to say there.
Okay.
No, I mean, we'd love to do it again, basically. It's just figuring out logistics. But it was so much fun. And there's also weirdly nothing in the space at the moment. There's no big design systems conferences happening in Europe at the moment.
No.
Apart from Into Design Systems, which I think is happening in mainland Europe next year in person. But
well, I'll encourage people to go and check out the blog because there's some really good articles in there. There was one actually that Dan wrote around roles in design systems, which was quite interesting. So yeah, good stuff. Back to your podcast then. So you've had some really good guests on. I've listened to I think pretty much most of them now. I actually like the switching format. You're doing the video thing now, which is great.
Yeah,
and you're speaking to people in quite diverse areas. Obviously, clearly there's a heavy design systems aspect because you know that's fundamentally what you guys are doing. But there obviously is a heavy design ops thing.
First season that I did, I think was very design ops heavy because partly back then I was just trying to clear in my head exactly what design ops was as well. So it was really great to like talk to the, you know, big hitters.
Yeah.
I mean, Dave coined the term design ops.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is just mind blowing.
And like Meredith was probably like one of the first people to have a role in that, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, the question I was going to ask is in you speaking to those people, has there been any kind of common pains and problems or any threads that you've noticed that keep coming to the fore?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I think I touched on it a little bit before around the fact that design ops and design systems don't quite get on at the moment, or not even get on. They're like, there's a little bit of lack of awareness between the two disciplines. And I think that this is kind of a problem that I've seen a little bit in, well, I don't think it's exclusive design, but I've definitely seen it in design generally. People are very blinkered in their own worlds and their own roles and their own sort of, you know, systems of working. And I think that seems to be, you know, one of the biggest learnings from talking to people is around communication and being open and understanding what people do. And to be honest, I mean, a lot of this just ends up coming down to like inclusivity and diversity.
Yeah.
Because it's, you know, diversity in all ways, not just in the ways that your DEI committee, you know, will, which is super important and, you know, not to be downplayed, but also like diversity in roles and diversity in backgrounds and diversity in thinking. I think that it's, you know, I don't know. I see a lot of dismissing from sort of certain people to others because they see somebody else's role as slightly lesser.
Right.
And I think that that's something that's like really dangerous because it's, you're basically closing your mind down to a whole other way of thinking and potential like benefits that you could have, you know, in the way that you work or in your life generally. But yeah, I think that's sort of one of the biggest sort of trends I've seen across all of them is definitely that like slight closed-mindedness in people complaining about sort of, you know, needing to sort of break down barriers, needing to really focus a lot on like communication and community work sort of between teams. Yeah, I think that's probably one of the biggest ones.
Okay, so we're coming close to time. I'd like to ask if you were given a magic wand, and whether you've answered this already or not, what's the biggest problem in design for you? What would you want to fix first?
There's too many things, Sean.
this is the thing, right? They're all wicked problems, right? It doesn't matter how much time and effort and energy you throw at them. You're never going to change it, right?
I think that's the thing. I think for me, it can probably be wrapped up in, it's kind of what I was talking about earlier, actually, around the fact that design is so immature as a discipline, or like our area of design and design as an important part of the org, not as a service, is you know, still relatively immature. If I could wave a wand and just make us a, you know, super mature practice and discipline, I think that could solve a lot of the problems that we're currently facing in terms of, you know, just constantly having to educate people about, you know, what the best ways to do things are, or what are ways to do things, even not even what the best ways are, just, you know, being aware that there are things out there. I think a lot of the inclusivity problems that we face as an industry as well, although, you know, to be honest, I think the more mature discipline is, probably the more ingrained some of those prejudices and discriminations are, so maybe that isn't the answer to that one. But you know, I've got my idealist glasses on. I think that, you know, it'd be really nice to have a lot more tried and tested, a lot more, you know, road behind us that we can sort of look back on and sort of see the, you know, wreckages along the way to learn from them, because I do feel like it's still a little bit, it's exciting, but it's still a little bit scary because it is just a lot of what we're doing. You know, we can quite often, you've mentioned Amy Hupe a couple of times. I think, you know, my conversations with Amy quite often end up with either us getting really excited because we've had a concept that we can, like, you know, go, oh, how would this work? And how could we, like, make this work within an organization? Or it ends up with us being quite despondent and frustrated because we're like, there doesn't seem to be an easy answer to the problem that we're facing. And it's usually one of the two. It's never a middle ground.
Yeah.
So you know, I think it'd be nice to maybe have a little bit more a little bit more wealth of knowledge behind us.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much for your time, Luke. I really appreciate it. I know you're a very busy man.
Thank you very much. Never too busy for you, Sean.
Awesome. Thank you very much. I'll see you soon.